going on, but...
Couple things.
All right, great. Well, I'll get started, and I'm really looking forward to hearing from everybody. And it is super great to be back here at Shoreline Community College, which, Jeanette, this is where I actually got my start many years ago.
Oh, wow.
My kids were in the parent ed program here when they tried to shut it down. And this was my employer, Shoreline Community College, and it's where we held a lot of our rallies and really worked to make sure that we got parent education at community colleges funded. So that really is what started me. When I was trying to fight for this program you now run, and was told by a state legislator, they're different now, but none of them looked like and I was told, you can't make a difference, you're just a mom in tennis shoes, which I am proudly wearing today. So, you know, we had to fight back then for child care, but it's been my passion throughout my political career, and fighting for early childhood education, learning, and parent-child centers, and of course child care, which is what we are here today to talk about, and we are really, really concerned about it. Child care has always been kind of that silent little epidemic that nobody really wanted to talk about, because they didn't want their employer to think, oh, they've got a child care problem, don't hire them or don't promote them. And as a result, we have, as a nation, really not done the right thing to make sure that we have enough child care for our kids in this country. And I have been fighting for this since I got into the Senate many years ago, but finally people are really talking about it, but we have a lot of work to go. And I am constantly hearing from families who are stressed because they can't find child care, from businesses who can't find employees because they lack child care, parents who say, it costs too much. Lori, I can't wait to hear your story. It costs too much. I can't find a place. I'm 200th in line. You know, all of that. And really this came to a head when the COVID crisis hit and so many of our child care centers shut down because they simply didn't have people coming in and couldn't afford to stay open. And even if they did have kids, all of a sudden they had to do all the things everybody had to do and couldn't afford the cost of that. So as a result of that, when we did the COVID funding in at the federal government, we put in place a fund to make sure that, we call it stabilization funds, to make sure child care centers could get back open again. And as a result of that, we had over 10 million kids nationwide who were able to stay in child care, which was great. But the challenge now, as all of you probably know too well, is the funding for that ran out at the end of September. And we tried really hard to get that attached, but as you know, all know, here we are. It did not get refunded. So I've introduced legislation to reinstate that funding and to begin that going again, so we can help make sure our child care facilities have what they need. This is an economic challenge for our entire country. The lack of child care across our nation cost $122 billion in lost wages and productivity and tax revenue. So this is an economic issue, a family issue. It's about the future of how we treat our kids. And I feel really passionately about this. So I wanted to be here today as a place where I got started in all of this, to hear from all of you about where we are today, what's happening at the state, what you are doing from parents, so I can really take the stories back and help us make sure that our country gets this back on track and moving again. So really appreciate all of you being here and sharing your stories and talking to us about this at a very critical time. So thank you. And Representative Sen, I'm going to start with you, and this is microphone will pass around.
Perfect. Thanks. Well, it's such an honor to be here with you and to talk about child care, and love that you talked about your start. When I first became a city council member, my kids were really little, and I remember that I was losing money by being on the city council because I had to pay for child care. It was so expensive, and, you know, if I could find it. And that, you know, certainly has always stuck with me as a, you know, as a working mom legislator. And I really appreciate that we're shining the light on the issues of pre-pandemic, pandemic, and post-pandemic, because all of those three things really matter. And it's not an exaggeration to say that it was pretty much do or die during the pandemic for childcare. And so luckily, the federal government, thank you, Senator Patty Murray, provided numerous rounds of funding so that we could stabilize childcare. Because without it, childcare would have imploded, and frankly, so would have the entire economy. But what we know is that those federal dollars have run out. It's weird to say that there's a silver lining to COVID, but if one was able to say that, it's that more businesses and people and politicians are aware about the critical need for childcare. And what's obvious, less obvious, but still super fundamental, is that the childcare market is broken. Yeah. The very market itself. Childcare providers can't make a living wage. Parents can't afford additional tuition, and yet child cares are barely making ends meet. And let's be clear, if we don't fix the child care market, then the entire economy and the entire economy as a whole may very well break too. Without child care, parents can't go to work. Houses and buildings and roads don't get built. Hospitals are understaffed. Future workforce, the kids of today, are less prepared, and on it goes. And frankly, it's not an exaggeration that we're teetering on a precipice of childcare still now after the pandemic. And so we really need that significant and sustained federal investment in childcare. And I would be remiss if I didn't thank child cares who really stuck through it during COVID. And I think they're now looking to us and saying, have you forgotten about us? Do you remember our challenges just to keep the doors open? And do you recognize that they literally have empty classrooms because they can't find staff who will work at such low wages and with so few benefits? And we can't lose those child care now that we've made it through the pandemic. But we also know, as Senator Murray mentioned, that we hear from parents a lot. And parents need action as well. And frankly, so do employers. When child care is as expensive as college, it isn't just low-income families either who need help. Middle-class families are struggling if they can even find child care, and certainly not to be able to afford it as well. And I would say that every day I'm hearing from a different industry, construction, healthcare, cities and counties, who are talking about childcare being a critical issue for them, and that they're ready to be part of the solution. So all of this to say is that here in Washington, we're ready to bring quality childcare to the next level. We have a framework here from the Fair Start for Kids Act from 2019. We're developing a true cost of quality model that includes paying living wages. And we have the strong coalition of business, labor, families, and legislators who are ready to get going. So now we need the federal government, the other Washington, to step up to the plate for our kids, our families, and our economy. And you know what? Senator Patty Murray is our not-so-secret weapon to help make all that happen. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I'm going to pass this to Allison.
Thank you, Representative Sen and Senator Murray. It's an honor to be here. I'm Allison Kretzinger with the Department of Children, Youth, and Families. We're the state agency that administers child care subsidy, child care regulation, supporting the licensing and quality initiatives for child care providers and access for families across the state. Ditto and echo everything that's been shared. What I'm going to talk a little bit about is how Washington was ready to successfully and sustainably use the federal dollars that did come during the pandemic, and what more is needed as we head towards sort of a post-pandemic era. I think important to note, Washington State, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families distributed $460 million to child care providers between March of 2020 and December of 2022. All of that being from the federal one-time dollars. Our legislature wonderfully appropriated not only the stabilization dollars, but resources from all the other one-time funding packages that came to support child care providers on sort of a consistent and quarterly basis through the pandemic. What that did for Washington State was sustain the existing provider market. And I'm happy to say today that we have equal to license capacity available at a license capacity of child care across the state. And also true, we don't have enough employees to fill that license capacity. And so what that says to us is that we need the ongoing sustainable investment. In Representative Sen mentioned the cost of care, and much of the work at the federal level has recognized that historic funding models for reimbursement rates for childcare providers don't truly cover the cost of care and wages. And so I'm happy that our state has taken on a design process to define what is the true cost of care that is inclusive of living wages, and we'll have a model to present to the legislature next year on that cost, but we know it's not going to be an inexpensive feat, and will take some continued investment, sustainable investment at the federal level. I want to talk about a few other things our legislature did during the pandemic to position our state to be ready for the next set of federal investment as well. Not only did we distribute nearly $470 million in grants, we expanded eligibility of child care subsidy to families up to 60% state median income. We expanded eligibility of child care subsidy to teachers who work in child care settings, to citizens, to undocumented citizens in Washington state, as well as those registered in state apprenticeships. And so all of those investments were made possible and part of the plan to continue to grow the access to child care for our families. We also increased rates to the 85th percentile of market rate, which is the wonky metric used by the Child Care Administration for state subsidy. I think we have one of the highest reimbursement rates in the nation now at that 85th percentile of market rate, really unprecedented. So we really built on what was necessary in our state, and the department was proud to administer grants, proud to increase eligibility and do all of these things in partnership with our legislature. And the realities remain true for our workforce, our child care providers, our child care workers, and our parents, that access remains limited and funding remains deeply, deeply necessary to continue to grow what is possible. Thanks. I think I'll pause there and turn it over
Can
to...
Can I just ask one question?
Absolutely.
So, Allison, you said $460 million from that stabilization. That now ended. What impact will you see?
That ended. So the stabilization grants went out the door and stabilized. It's not clear yet what the impact will be. Those grants... we were able to distribute all of those grants through calendar year 2022, and so we've seen the end of that. I will say I am cautiously optimistic because of the increased investment in the subsidy reimbursement rate to that 85th percentile that will help weather some of the impact of those grants going away, in addition to increased eligibility. So as more families are eligible and the rates are higher, that... we're cautiously optimistic that it will stabilize what currently exists for those families that are eligible for subsidy, but it certainly isn't helping that.
It
doesn't meet the need, and it doesn't fix that sort of middle income area.
And can I add one more thing? I think the other thing that's happening too is more classrooms are full now. So there's a better financial return on the investment of two teachers in a classroom so that it's filled up. So that added with what you say, I think makes a difference, and I'm sure you can speak to that more. Because during the stabilization funds, I think a lot of programs were filling in that gap to stay open to cover who wasn't coming and paying anymore. So I think those two things together.
That's a good point, yeah. And I'm going to awkwardly pass this around the table.
I'll go ahead and bring it to Janet.
There you go. All right. Thank you so much, Allison and everyone. It's so nice to be here and get to know all of you. And Senator Murray, thank you so much for just being here, being present. I'm from Shoreline. I went to Shorecrest High School. I'm a graduate of Shorecrest High School and Shoreline Community College. So being here as the director of the Parent Child Center has been really great. It's really full circle. So I'm happy to be here. I really wanted to bring it to the perspective of the director, what's actually happened at the center, things that I'm seeing, I think it's very important to address. One of them is, we mentioned a little bit, is staffing. I would say getting the staff at my center has been hard. I would say looking at the wages of could be what's holding that, and then competitors, different childcare centers, things like that, the school district. So really a focus would be like the income for the staff because of the hard work they're doing. I'm seeing it day to day. I will also say that impact of a childcare center is so important for the employees on campus, in the community, and our students that have little ones, helping them pave their way, their future endeavors, their goals, finishing their education, having that on the college campus is so great, and having the direct communication from within the whole community, I'll say, is very important. And having that support as me as the director to have that just openness to the community and really marketing, spreading out how can we get more of those families here that we lost the pandemic and now post-pandemic, where did they go, how to bring those families back. It's a big focus of mine, and then recruiting and getting some staff at my center. So just because I want to get more families and help those families, but if there's a hold on staffing.
So that's really keeping you from filling your staff?
I would say is just getting the staff here, because then I'm going to meet those teacher-to-child ratios, and I want to make sure I look at safety, continuity of care, consistency, and those are other key important factors that I look into as the director.
We hear that a lot, that staff, there's again, they'll be in the classroom, and they're ready, but they don't have the staff.
The kids, the classroom,
Right.
Yeah. And this true commitment, I think I hear underlying your comment, is that you need quality staff. You need staff that can do, that's the other thing that I hear, is we may have applications, but they're people that aren't really qualified, and think working with a group of kids sounds really exciting, and have no understanding of what that means. And so, of course, not hiring someone like that as a lead teacher is super important.
Yeah, and I'm in the classroom at times supporting, and I'm seeing the hard work that's happening, and it's a lot of work on our teachers, and it's you see the job description, but there's a lot more that's happening, right? Mm-hmm. So just and the passion has to be there as well, right? For the little ones, right? There are futures, so really having them, and then they have an impact to our site and the culture of the site as well.
And then Laura, you're at Danae's.
Yes.
Location?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
So that's I will transition to Lori as one of our parents.
Thank you, Janine. Yep. My name is Lori Carlson. This is Jojo. Jojo, can you say how old you are?
4.
Yes. Jojo has a little sister, too. She's also at the Parent Child Center. And I first just want to thank you, Senator Murray and Rep. Sen, for being here today, for listening to us. For the opportunity to share my story as a mother of two small children, which is not an experience that we get to share a lot about in our society. You mentioned that, Senator Murray. It's a silent dilemma, or has been for a very long time, and it's really awesome to be heard and to have our experiences highlighted. I also want to thank you for your decades of service. On behalf of children and moms and families and a quality public school system. Those are all things that I have personally benefited from. I grew up in a working class family in Bellingham, Washington. In fact, I went to Shuckson Middle School, where your sister taught. I think you visited us maybe in sixth grade or so.
Yeah.
My dad's salary as a furniture repairman wasn't quite enough to support the cost of daycare for me and my brother. So my mother quit her job and was out of the workforce for 14 years. That, of course, had a really large impact in her career growth. We talked a lot when I was an adult, finally, about all the dream jobs she had that she wasn't able to access because she was home with us. And I didn't truly understand that sacrifice until I became a mom myself. I was a non-traditional student, so I finished my bachelor's right before JoJo was born. And as I began to look into childcare, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to start my new career because of the cost of care. There weren't a lot of affordable options, and we just got so lucky to grab the last spot in the infant room at the Shoreline Parent Child Center. And I think a lot about how lucky we were, particularly, because this daycare is a very richly diverse and high-quality daycare, of which there are not a lot. And our kids are mixed race and children of two moms. And we just feel so lucky to be able to be in this environment where they get to be themselves and they get to see not only friends, but also teachers who look like them. Their teachers have developed robust curricula that had JoJo spelling out me and my wife's name at 3 and a half. Had to get that proud mama moment in there. And our family is able to access quality, affordable childcare. That meant that we could all fulfill our potential. I could start my career, our kids could be well cared for, and start their learning out the best way possible. I have to say that this is just my story, which involves a lot of luck, as I mentioned, and also some privilege. Many of JoJo's friends' parents at the PCC are working toward a degree while working full-time jobs and parenting multiple children. I do not know how they do it. Some are single parents who would have no income without access to affordable childcare. We talk a lot about class mobility in our country, We tell people to pull themselves up by their bootstraps, work hard, and find success for themselves. This is where the rubber meets the road on that narrative. There are barriers to success that we have to remove if we're serious about everyone having access to the American dream. Lack of access to affordable, quality healthcare is one of those barriers. Thank you. Every single child should have what our two children have. My hope is for a childcare system that doesn't require luck, one where all parents have access to what they need for their families to experience success. Thank you, and thank you for being here.
Thank you. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh,
I'll come get it.
Thank you. No worries. Oh, so so inspirational. Thank you so much for sharing your story. Gosh, I'm getting choked up. Thank you for inviting me to talk about one of my favorite issues for my whole career. It's been childcare. I wake up, I fall asleep, I think about how to build a better day for wonderful children like JoJo and Celia, who I think is off going to the restroom. I just returned from a national conference where I heard stories about the challenges of other states' childcare systems. What they're experiencing and some of the solutions they've come up with. And those stories reminded me of what an honor it is to live in the fair state of Washington, where we have done better than most states, shoring up the childcare system, utilizing both state and federal investments. I stood very proud at that national conference and invoked your name a few times, Senator Murray. Today, I am especially grateful for the amazing leadership of Representative Tana Sen, Senator Claire Wilson, and others in the state legislature who laid a strong foundation and provided direction and funding that provided the supports for those most in need during the pandemic. They also had the foresight to do some planning around the issue that you brought up at the start around the funding ending the end of September. And that has really provided a great safety net for us as we enter into this next phase, next chapter. So thank you so much. And thank you to Senator Murray, thanks to also to Senator Murray's efforts, which we've talked about already, that the stabilization funds cannot be underestimated around keeping the bottom from falling out during the pandemic. Yeah. I cannot begin to say enough about those heady first days of trying to figure out how to push out funds fast and furious to keep the childcare system buoyed up here in Washington State. And thanks to DCYF, who deserves a great deal of thanks for their heroic all-hands-on-deck approach that resulted in those funds getting out the door faster than almost all my national colleagues. I sat on many phone calls where I was saying, oh, you don't have any dollars out the door yet? We've already had our second wave. And so I just want to bring that into the room. And thanks to all of the leaders in Washington that showed the nation what we can do for children and when the whole government works together in a coordinated way. But now the stabilization grants went out the door that we had about a year ago. And that means providers have already utilized those funds, and we're trying to do things like what we just talked about, fill the classrooms, provide the supports around expanding access for families while paying more funds. But still, we hear from providers every day, every week, that those investments allowed them to recruit and retain staff through bonuses and increased compensation, and that without additional funds, they're going to struggle. And that's just the truth of the matter. Washington has worked hard to grow and invest a high-quality childcare system that I have been so proud to be a part of throughout my whole career. But families and childcare providers are still facing a very real dual crisis. Families like Lori's and many, many others that I hear stories of struggle to be able to afford childcare. Gaining access to subsidy, especially in King County, is a problem because it costs so much more to live that a state median income approach to eligibility is problematic. And so I hear stories about that all the time. And despite the high cost of care, providers still are not earning a living wage. And that is something that we want to see. And yet, I'm really hopeful that Washington, because it works together, will chart a path forward towards an even stronger childcare system. Our legislature, we've talked a little bit about this, recognized this crisis, and last year tasked DCYF to develop plans for delivering a wage equity and benefits to the child care workforce and for making affordable child care available to all families, no more than 7%, which should ring true to you, of a family's income. CCA of WA, along with SEIU and our government partners, is excited to be part of the team working to develop recommendations, as Allison referenced, for the 25 Legislative Session. The Child Care Stabilization Act that you recently dropped is an example of another ray of hope for us in the child care world. If passed, this crucial funding would provide much needed support to our struggling child care system while we have time to figure out how to stabilize even more in the upcoming 5 years and bring about maybe more consistent funding that could flow in that would allow us to reach the goal that we have. As a former child care center director, I feel your pain. And as a parent who used licensed child care for 17 years to be able to work and provide for my family and reach my potential, I know that we've come a long way since 1985 when I started my early learning career at the University of Washington child care programs. And I also know that we still have much work to do that I know that you would agree. Our children are looking to us to pave the way forward for them. I look forward to the work that all of us today will do together, each playing our unique role, that with many changes will lead to a child care system that ensures parents and providers have all the support and resources they need to truly provide that high quality care we all dream of for every child, including our lovely JoJo and Celia back here. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Anybody else want to add anything from up here? I'm happy to take questions from the press, but I just want to say this is exactly what motivates me to go back and keep fighting. I'm working really hard to try and extend the stabilization funds. We have to have that. We are not ready to just say you're on your own. And also with my child care bill as well, that will mean that no parent has to pay more than 7% of their income, which just seems like logical if we want our economy to work again and make sure that our teachers get funded, that we have the classroom space, and that we work together at the federal and state level. And I'm so excited to be from a state that gets this. But this is a national problem. It's a national problem for kids and families, for our businesses, for our economy. And I'm determined to keep working on it, and I want you to know that. So thank you all.
Thank you. And Lori, I really appreciated what you said, too, about starting your career and, you know, without childcare, you don't have that opportunity. You know, worked a lot on equal pay, and then after you start thinking about that, you're like, okay, we can have equal pay, but if women can't get into the workplace from the get-go because we don't have childcare, then it falls flat.
We're recognizing that more and more. Yeah. We are hearing more and more in Washington from employers around projects that they can't get done without childcare.
Absolutely.
So. I think one piece that would maybe be helpful as you think about going back is I was down in Clark County, and we have to replace a bridge between Oregon and Washington. And one of the biggest challenges and concerns right now as they get ready to launch that work is who's taking care for the kids during the hours to replace that. And that's a multi-year project. And recruiting enough labor and workers to come in and do the engineering, the construction is the biggest concern right now is how do we recruit enough child care? And we're trying to think about creative ways to partner. How do we put modular buildings on site? What are some innovative approaches that the agency is engaged in conversation on? But it's gonna be a major multi-year infrastructure project that is critical for
and the agency and I met with the Port of Seattle, who has a similar concern around the 520 bridge project and airport projects that they've got funding for, but much like what you're describing, they don't have workers for. So it's interesting how the current employer, for-profit or government sector employee market is mirroring some of the same issues. We don't have qualified workers, and they can't go to work without childcare, to your point. So they're sitting there at home or doing other jobs to piece it together, and we're hearing it all over the place.
And just to underscore that too, you know, for healthcare, for construction, a lot of these are 12-hour shift jobs. And if we have childcare, that's just school day.
9 to 5 doesn't work.
It doesn't work. And so, again, trying to be creative, how do you have it on site? How do you have non-standard hours? How do you really recognize what the employment situation is and having childcare be able to match that.
Yeah.
We're beginning to think about how do we talk about it in the form of infrastructure. It's infrastructure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just critical infrastructure.
It is.
For infrastructure.
Yeah. I mean, I think President Biden putting childcare requirements with the CHIPS Act was amazing. We're looking to, you know, see what else, where else should we be doing that? Exactly. Like business can be and should be part of the solution. And I think we're lucky in Washington State that business is really on board, being very interested in this, but it's,
they need us. To focus on this,
Senator Marie, I don't know if this is a narrative that you're hearing too in the Senate, but a lot of people during the pandemic, when they found out I work mostly from home, were like, oh, that's great, you can watch your kids and work at the same time. And I think if you've never watched a toddler before, well, honestly, like older men have not, right? So folks who are coming from that perspective, I think, don't really get that it's not a both and situation.
That
it's really an impossibility.
Yeah, yeah, very true.
Really
silly.
Mm-hmm.
Can I take questions
from press? One question.
Yeah.
This is for Senator Murray and Representative Sen. This week, our organization filmed petitioners at the Mercer Island QFC who are collecting signatures to amend or repeal our capital gains tax. Mm-hmm. And they're letting people know that this will save them from being taxed on their home. Of course, they don't pay taxes on their home because all real estate is exempt from the tax. But can you react to the possible loss of the capital gains tax money, which includes child care, and what's your message to Washingtonians who may be asked to sign these petitions?
Since that's the Washington State Legislature, I'll let Representative
Thanks. when we passed the Fair Start for Kids Act, the same year we passed the capital gains tax, and we dedicated it specifically to early learning and K-12 education. And it has been amazing to be able to bring that money in, have it dedicated. But just like lottery funds, sometimes we think that that means that we'll have enough money and now everything is set and we don't need anything else to cover education or early learning. But these are huge costs for our state. So repealing a capital gains tax, first of all, not only would it send Washington State's tax system back to being one of the most aggressive in the state, but we'll lose key dollars that we are using to fund early learning, to stabilize childcare, to fund special education in our schools. So I know I certainly would be very against that. I was proud to sponsor the capital gains tax in the House. And, you know, I come from Bellevue, from East Side, from areas where my constituents are paying the capital gains tax, and I ran on that, and they elected me for that. And so I hope that this isn't something that that does make it to the ballot, or if it does, that people will recognize the value of it and vote it down.
Any other questions? Yes, I have questions. I'm with Como, and I have two questions about the House leadership. What do you think of the House leadership situation?
And again, I'm not in the House, but I can tell you that no American wants chaos. We have a lot of challenges in this country. You just heard about one today, and we need the House to deal with that. And here in the Senate, as chair of the Appropriations Committee, we are getting our bills done. We are doing what we need to do, but we need a partner in the House of Representatives. That's how our country works. And they need to recognize that the way to do that is bipartisanship. You cannot pass something without making sure that you have enough votes. And the only way to get that in the House or Senate is to work with the other party. So I hope they come together soon and realize that.
Do you have a preference for the leader of the House? Is there any Republican that Democrats can work with?
I am not a member of the House, and I am not part of who will vote for the Republican members, so you need to ask our House members. But I think it's very clear that right now that this is an inter-party Republican chaotic problem, and they've got to figure it out.
Last question. What are your plans going forward to work with the House leadership?
Well, it depends on who they are. Again, I chair the Senate Appropriations Committee. We are doing everything to get our bills written. We had a plan to make sure that we did not go into a chaotic situation with a continuing resolution. And we are working to get our job done again. I work bipartisan. I work with my Republican counterpart, Senator Susan Collins. We drafted our 12 appropriations bills, passed every single one of them on a bipartisan basis, and we're working them through the Senate now. The House needs to do the same. They're passing partisan bills that will never pass.
I would just add that in Washington State, we sometimes make the joke that when people go to the Senate, it's great if they're House trained. I would say that on the federal level, it would be wonderful if more people were Washington State trained, because Senator Murray is an amazing example of leadership. So, thank you.
Sammy West from KUOW, the NPR station here in Seattle. Thanks for talking about this issue. I was curious if you could talk a little bit, Senator, about kind of next steps for the legislation you introduced. When are you hoping that something happens with it?
Well, what has now occurred is that the funds stopped going out at the end of September because that was the end date. We had hoped to extend that funding past the September 30th deadline. And as you saw, it became very difficult with the continuing resolution and the emergency funds that were requested. I am, in fact, talking today to the administration again as they put forward their next package to see if we can finally get it included to do us an emergency, because this is an emergency. And meanwhile, I am trying to pass it legislative as well. So no road is not being gone down on this.
Yeah, I guess if it doesn't work out, do you have any ideas for like what you'll do to help these?
I will repeat. I am chair of the Appropriations Committee. I have worked across the board to make sure that within every committee we have, whether it's the VA, Department of Defense, Agriculture, Commerce, that we are addressing child care issues within that. Last year at the end of the year, we were able to increase the CDBG funds, which are used a lot for child care, biggest increase ever, and that's what I'm working to do as well. So I am looking at every avenue I can to get additional funding for child care. We can't have our economy grow. We can't have our middle class be able to participate in our economy. We can't assure people that in America your child is taken care of unless we address this issue.
Mm-hmm. Hear, hear.
And I think we're going to rush for a group photo. Yep. Do you want to be in the photo? So if everybody wants to gather in front of our little table here, we're going to do that. One beautiful group photo. And Naomi can
send
anybody
photo. Thank you so much for constantly working on the